Okay, guys, great. We can start with the meeting now. As you know, we've got an open line meeting here. We're looking forward to seeing you all, or all of those who are coming to the TDC convention in Vegas in 2 weeks. But I got several calls from guys that wanted to have the meeting anyway, and although we don't have an exact subject line to talk about, Steve and I have noticed on some of the other meetings we held in what we have called the TDC Champions Club, that they've just been really great meetings. A lot's been learned, and so we're going to try it here with the TDC Connected group, and you guys are all invited to chime in with any questions or concerns you may have, anything you'd like to add to the group, and we look forward to hearing from any and all of you on those items. I would like to start, though, by asking for your help, and one of the things that we will be doing at the convention in Las Vegas is having what we're going to call a table clinic, or what Bud was calling a table clinic, and that's going to be kind of a breakout session where those who want to speak with us about the marketing aspects of the business can speak with Steve and myself. Nona will be available for some questions, but then the guys, Sean and Bud, are going to have some repair tables set up, and they want to be able to show you guys how to repair any hand pieces that you may have questions on how to do that. And we're going to do that at the end of one of the days. But what Bud needs from you, what Bud and Sean need, is to know what hand pieces you'd like to go over during that table clinic that they're going to hold. So please chime in and let us know.
David?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Charles from Phoenix.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea to bring us up to date on some of the technical stuff, especially some of these electric hand pieces. You know, I've never had formal training on them. I kind of worked my way through some of them, and I know like the 25 LPAs we send to you guys and some of the W&H we send to the factory. But the ones that we can fix, it'd be nice to have a couple of them there so we can see them taken apart and put back together. I think that'd be a big help.
Okay, absolutely, we'll do that.
I'll second that one.
Okay, so I'm going to assume we want to know the CAVOs, since those are the most popular. We have had some of you out here at the corporate office for some advanced training on that, but you may have forgotten something or a trick of the trade that Bud and Sean know that could help you through that. So certainly we'll add that to the table clinic.
Very good.
David?
Yes.
This is Jesse in Virginia.
Yes, Jesse.
One of the hand pieces that I'd like to see, get a little more information on, I know this may be redundant for everybody else, but I've had considerable amount of training or trouble with CAVO 6500B. So I'd like to maybe if they go through one of those.
Certainly we can. Certainly we can.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Mike in Minneapolis.
Yeah, Mike.
Parts. I have, in past meetings, we've talked about different bearings and some of the premium bearings as opposed to the stock bearings.
Sure.
And I guess I don't understand the difference in part numbers and what's what and stuff like that. So maybe parts would be something good to talk about too.
Okay, that's a great idea. And we are going to be handing you out some really good information, some cheat sheets on the new parts that are available, and also some reference guides to turbine rebuilds that includes these different parts and descriptions. As you all know, it seems like for so long there was basically two bearings available to the industry. And once the Star patent ran out, it seems like there's a new bearing available to the industry every few months. So we do have all of that catalog, what we carry here, what's available, and what bearings are best to use in which situations. I certainly couldn't bore you right now with all of those details, and I probably wouldn't get them all right anyway. So that's something that Bud has been working diligently on in creating for you guys, and that will be something, Mike, that we do hand out during the conference, and then we will make that available to to everybody after that online. If you lose it or if you just don't have it, you can download that, print it up, and put it in your reference materials. So great question, Mike, and we are definitely doing that.
Good. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, we certainly don't need to spend time on the table clinic stuff. If you guys do, anyone out there who's listening who does want or think of something in the next week or so that they want would like to go over, please shoot me an email or a phone call so we can get that on Sean and Bud's agenda to cover during that table clinic session at the end of one of the days at the meeting. So at this point, I appreciate that, Mike and Jesse and Alex and Charles. And I think now let's open it up to anything that you guys would like to talk about, any questions or concerns you have, whether it's marketing or shipping or dealing with these high gas prices and how guys are trying to combat that. So once again, just hit star 6 on your phone, and you're more than welcome to add to the group discussion.
Hey, Dave.
David? Yes.
Dave, this Charles again from Phoenix.
Yes, Charles.
The gas prices are a big concern for me as well as I'm sure for a lot of you guys. Because of the competition here, I'm still forced to pick up and deliver most of my hand pieces. So it's been a concern for me. So what I've been doing is adding the price of 1 gallon of gas per invoice, just automatically for every invoice. It doesn't pay all my gas bill, but it sure helps. So it's just a suggestion.
Can anyone add to that?
Are you actually showing that as a separate line item on the invoice, or are you just adding it into the price of the handpiece?
No, I actually add it on. I add, you know, the price of the repair, tax on parts, and then I put fuel surcharge, and then I add that onto it.
Yeah, that's the best way, I think, to do it. If you're going to do it, I mean, everybody understands that gas is going crazy, so I don't think they'll give you a hard time.
That's a common thing that they're doing, too, I found.
Yeah, you see that from pretty much every service company around, no matter what they're doing.
I think there were a few guys who did have an added fuel surcharge back, I think it was about a year and a half to 2 years ago when the gas prices zipped way out of control there. And from what I understand in the discussions that we had then, nobody was getting any pushback on that. Nobody was getting any grief from their customers. So, Charles, I think that might be a great idea.
Yeah, I've never had any complaints.
You know, David, in the service businesses that I've been in, when I've gone that direction, you know, a lot of times we sent out letters prior to them even seeing it, but I don't really know if that's necessary from a lot of things that I see. I mean, people know what's going on with gas prices. You know what I'm saying? So as long as we don't get crazy with a surcharge, they're not going to bitch about it if it's a few dollars.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that, Gary and Charles. And we see it here. And you guys will see it in FedEx and UPS deliveries. Both of those companies have recently raised their prices. Now, I know it's just a couple of bucks, but we understand why. And, of course, you know, you can't really complain about it when you understand why. We're getting some pretty good discounted pricing from them, which we've enjoyed that for quite a while, but they have added some fuel surcharge into that total shipping in the last few months for sure. Okay, good point, Charles, and I don't think we'll get anybody to push back on that. I think it was Tony D a couple of years ago who kind of introduced that idea to the group, and everybody kind of jumped on board with Tony and originally thought, wow, aren't you getting a bunch of pushback from your customers who are complaining about that extra fee? And I think Tony said out of all of his customers, he had maybe one or two people even mention it to them. So, Gary, you're right about that. They just it's almost like it's expected now. And if you do see it on an invoice, you're really not going to get any pushback from your customers.
Hey, David, yeah, Tony here.
Yeah, Tony.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I started a couple years ago. I just label it as a handling charge is the way I label it, and I charge $6.95 per invoice is what I charge. And I've been, like you said, a couple years, and I only had like one or two people who asked me about it, and nobody else has ever said anything about it.
Yeah, that was brilliant. And what, Tony, real quick, like what percentage out of your customers do you think you have on that mailer, that U.S. Priority Mail system?
On the mail system?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I use probably 80 to 90% of my customers use the mail is what
oh
I use.
Gosh.
Yeah.
So you've got 80 to 90% on mail. Now, is that both ways or is that just?
Both ways. Most of the time, unless I'm going back that direction, I'll mail it back to that office. I won't make a special trip back to that office.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be going past or in real close to the area, I will. And then on pickup, same way. Unless I'm in the area or I'm going to be there the next day, again, I ask them if they have one of my mailers. If they don't, I've made me a fax sheet even to what I'll tell them. If you don't have my mailer, give me a fax number, and I'll fax your sheet over with instructions, a label, and work order on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just put it in a box you'd have in your office there, tape it shut, put that label on it, and it'll come directly to me.
Oh, that's perfect. Quick question for you, Tony.
Yeah.
Do you also charge your non, the 10 to 20% that are not on the mailer, do you charge them a handling charge as well?
Every invoice.
Okay, so it does
every invoice. It's just straight across the board on every invoice. That way I don't have one person one time getting it and the next time they don't get it, and then they say, hey, I got charged this last time and this time I didn't. What's the deal, you know? I just do it straight across the board.
Okay, perfect, because they'd always lean towards the side, well, you didn't charge me last time, why are you charging me this time kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So if you just charge straight across the board for everybody, it'll always be the same. They can go back as long as 2+ years ago, and they'll still see that same handling charge there.
That's for sure.
And in the big picture, their whole handpiece repair, not really a factor, right?
No, not at all.
Okay, perfect. How did you get, not to get us off subject here, but I'm sure some guys would love to hear from you, how hard was it to massage your customers that used to be on pickup and delivery towards that mailer?
Really, it wasn't hard at all, David, because a lot of them's used to, like when they have their dentures or their crowns or bridges or whatever made, a lot of them's using mail already with their dental labs that does that for them. And when I started introducing this, I just told them it was for convenience for them, you know, where they wouldn't have to call me or anything like that. All they have to do is fill out the work order, put the handpiece in the box, tape it shut, drop it in the mail, it comes directly to us. And that's the way I sold it, is just for convenience. And like I said, I'd say majority of them, you know, very few of them have anybody. I mean, there's some that pick them up, but a lot of them have mail that they use on getting their crowns and dentures and bridges and all them things like that made. And they just do it through the mail, and they're pretty well conditioned already. It's just kind of, you introduce it to them as a convenience for them, and then just go that way. And I've never had any problem with it at all.
That's perfect. You introduce it as a convenience for them.
Yeah.
So they don't have to wait a day or two for you to drop by.
Yeah, that way they don't have to call me to make a pickup or have to wait, like you said, wait a day or two if I'm going to be by in that area to pick it up.
Right.
That way they can drop it in the mail. And it's usually, if it's local here within 30 minutes away from my place, it'll be here usually the next day with no problem.
So you went into the office and verbally, you know, kind of laid out the plan, introduced it as a convenience, and it was very well received?
Yeah.
Now, that's perfect. What you will find is that you, at that point, though, you do maybe find yourself in competition with some of the other mail order type companies.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do to combat that? Do you still market? Do you still get into those offices on a periodic basis?
Well, see, I'm in my offices anywhere from every 3.5 to 4 months. I'm back in that office anyway, making a service call.
Okay.
So my face is in front of them, you know, on a regular basis.
Okay, so you're still in there 3 and 4 times a year.
Yeah.
Just so that your face is in front of them,
that's
they
right.
don't lose sight of who the repair person is. And
that's exactly. And in case they change hands, you know, if somebody is, if they get a new assistant or a new hygienist or whoever takes over handpiece repairs, that way I can meet that new person when I'm in the office at that time then.
And so what you find with that is that it's not the tail wagging the dog.
Correct.
Right. From the furthest reaches of one part of your territory over to the furthest reaches of the other because they've got a pickup or delivery.
Yeah. I mean, I got an office that's not 10 minutes from my house, and there's been times they've used my mailer box to mail it to me.
Well,
you know,
and it probably was more convenient.
It was, rather than them having to get on the phone and call me,
mm-hmm.
and make a schedule for me to come and get it. They just dropped it in the box, and here it comes.
And do you use that in your marketing to new customers? Hey, and I've got this convenient way for you to work with me? Okay.
Yeah, that's something I always push.
Okay.
Hey, Davis, John.
Yes.
Cisco. I think a good point on that, too, is back to the gas thing, that people understand that it's a lot less cheaper to mail it than it is for us to drive $20 worth of gas rather than, you know, I put it as it's a way that I keep my costs down to them. You know, I'm able to control my costs better if you use this rather than having to pick up and deliver.
And so you're pushing that same basic idea, John, to your customers?
Yeah, and I think, too, that I don't know where he is, but I'm in a more rural area. You know, my customers are 2 hours away, so they're used to mailing their stuff, you know. So.
And so they get it right away, and it's well-received?
Sure, and I think, too, like you said, that just the fact of having to call somebody up and schedule a time, people just sometimes don't want to do that. They would rather have it there and not have to call anybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm in front of them all the time answering questions, too. That's important. You're right, because every piece of business I've gotten is from somebody using a mailer box. So you have to be careful not to be that guy, you know.
Absolutely.
And something else, too, David, I've had offices call me asking if I'm going to be in the area in the next day or two.
Uh-huh.
And I'll state whether I am or not. And if I'm not, well, we'll go ahead and drop it in the mail. We're just checking to see if he's going to be coming by. If not, we'll just drop it in the mail.
Okay, so they...
David?
Yes.
This is Jerry. I got a quick question for Tony,
yes,
actually, too.
Sure.
The first question, on your mailer scenario,
mm-hmm.
are they, when you send them the label or however they get your label from the fax, is
mm-hmm.
that prepaid back to you, or do they pay the freight?
No, it's a prepaid UPS label, or a post
cool.
office label. Is what it is.
Okay.
I just got a little instruction sheet. I got a copy of my work order, and it tells them to fill out the work order, make a copy of it, put it in the box, put their handpiece in a box that they have there in their lab, tape it shut, tape my label to it, drop it in the mail, and it's coming to me.
Yeah,
okay.
Same way, I
got one other question. Since 80% of your customer base are utilizing this your mailing system,
mm-hmm.
does the 80-20 principle apply? Even though 80% are getting it that way, you've only been able to increase your marketing time availability by 20%, or did it go up more than that?
Oh, no, I mean, it's increased it because I'm either in the lab or I'm out doing service calls, you know, versus going and picking up and delivering.
Yeah, do you have a feel for did it increase your time to market by 30% or any? Do you have a feel for that?
I would say it probably 30 or 40%. Easily.
Oh, cool. Okay.
You know,
great.
Because I'm not spending my time going and trying to make deliveries and then getting phone calls through the day saying, hey, I got a handpiece that needs picked up, and I try to run by that day or the next day to pick it up. You know, I'm either in the lab, like today I'm in the lab doing repairs. Depends on what comes in the mail today as well. I might
right.
be in the lab tomorrow as well, and then Friday I'll be out doing service calls, you know.
Oh, good deal. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And just throwing this out there, but with a $6.95 service charge, Tony?
Yeah.
You're probably making money on that.
Well,
so,
and I did that. I started out at $5.95 when I first started a couple years ago, and then when the gas started jumping, I bumped it up another dollar. And
okay.
I basically did that because shipping was increasing,
mm-hmm.
postal service was increasing, and gas is increasing. And I thought, well, rather than marking my handpiece repair up, I'll just throw a handling charge in there, see what happens. And like I said, you know, I had maybe one or two people call and say, hey, you know, what's the handling charge? And I explained it to them. They said, okay, no problem.
I'm just thinking, so that extra buck or so, maybe buck or two by the end of shipping both ways that you make on that,
mm-hmm.
helps offset the fuel charges that you do have.
Correct.
Oh, that's brilliant. For sure. I mean, it goes right along with what Charles is doing with a
fuel surcharge. Mm-hmm.
With a $4, I think he said he's charging, adding about the cost of 1 gallon of gasoline, which is probably right in that, you know, $4 to $4.50 range. I don't know exactly what it is in Phoenix, Arizona, but it's probably in that range.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great idea. You're not only, in some cases, offsetting your fuel cost or equaling it out. In some cases, you might be coming a way ahead a little bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, it'll vary. You know, if you get a box of handpieces, it's got about 5 handpieces in it, you know, it's going to cost more than just one handpiece coming back to you in the mail. So that was the one reason I kind of went with that price. That way I'd offset the difference of a heavier box versus a lighter box.
And this is a question that maybe nobody's thought of, but I was thinking about. Do you think, because of this mailer system, do you think your customers avoid maybe piling handpieces up before they call you? Because they've just got the mailer and heck, they got a handpiece or two, just throw it in the mailer and get it to Tony, rather than maybe hoarding the handpieces till they get 4, 5, or 6 and then finally calling you?
Well, I have some offices that'll do that, because like I'll have an office now and then, I'll go in there and they'll say, here, we got some, you know, we've just been collecting them because they got a bunch. This office, it's a children's dentist, and my gosh, I bet they've got 30, 40 high speeds. And they'll lay 4 or 5 back, and when I'm in the office doing a service call, they'll say, here's 5, 6 hand pieces, take them, fix them. You know, and I've told them multiple times, because the lady I deal with, I went to school with in high school, I said, you know, you can call me anytime, you know, and when I'm out and about, I can always swing by. And she said, no, we got plenty of hand pieces. Don't worry about it.
Well, so I guess we don't. I'm just trying to wonder. I guess one of the complaints I get from guys is that, you know, business is slow, and in some cases when they do complain to me about that, you know, I just need to do something different with my marketing, and I'll say, you know, the first, I can't remember who mentioned this to me, but it's always easier to get business from a current customer than to get business from a new customer.
Correct.
And so my kind of line of thought is always when a guy thinks, hey, it's been slow for a couple of weeks, just get on the phone, call your current customers, the ones that are super happy with you, and a lot of times you'll find that, oh, you know what, we do have a couple of hand pieces here. We were waiting to get a few more going, but yeah, come on in. And so that's what prompted my question was, do you think they hoard them more or less because they have that the ease of that mailer system? I was thinking that maybe they wouldn't do that, and if they get a couple, they'll just shoot them over to you rather than wait, you know, until they get 4 or 5 deep to do that.
No, I'll get anywhere from one hand piece to half a dozen hand pieces. It just varies from office to office.
And I think guys might complain about getting one hand piece if there was no kind of a fuel surcharge or a handling charge, because it's like, well, doggone it, you know, they keep sending me one hand piece at a time, and I'm paying shipping both ways. If you offset that with some sort of a surcharge or a handling fee, you never worry about that. You want the hand piece.
Correct.
Absolutely.
So, David, Gary.
Yes, Gary.
You know, I know my area is not like everybody else's where, like, I don't use any mail, okay? And I do advertise free pickup and delivery. I mean, I say free pickup and delivery. So you really got to watch what you're doing with surcharges and stuff like that, because that's where you're going to get the feedback from the people saying, you know, you advertise free pickup and delivery, but yet you're charging me a fuel surcharge. Anybody come across this?
Well, this is Tony again, not myself. I've never had it happen to me on that, you know. So
yeah, see, I don't, even in my situation, Tony, I don't even see that happening when gas goes crazy. I think people are just so used to that already. I mean, I know in my area, everything you do that you have a service truck coming to your house for, which I don't have a lot of them, but, you know, I know a lot of people that do. Everything's got fuel surcharges on it when the gas goes crazy.
Yep, everything.
You know, and if people, you know, my thing to people would be, you know, just, you know, realize what's happening out there in the gas world. I mean, you see it, and you don't usually have to even go through this, but if they say anything, it's like, you know, when I figured out that I'm picking up and delivering, gas was in the $3 range, not 5.
Yes, sir.
You know, and as long as you don't get crazy, nobody will even blink an eye at that stuff.
Yeah.
As long as it's not outrageous.
Yeah, and it's true.
So how can you combat that, Gary, if you are advertising the free pickup and delivery? Is try and get them on a mailer for their convenience and then add the surcharge to that?
You know, that was the first time I heard that scenario, David. I have not even printed labels. I mean, I'm already to. All I have to do is go to a print and get it done.
Okay.
I even, you know, have money in the account already. But I've never seen a need to use it because I've still been kind of staying close to my home. if you know what I'm saying. If I go farther away, David, that might become an issue when gas is, you know, $5, $6 a gallon out here. You know, and now it's time, well, don't advertise to them the same way, I guess, is the only way around it.
Well, I think one of the points that Tony was making was he had a customer that's within 10 minutes of his house that still
and
uses
they grab
the mailer out of that convenience.
Yeah, and you know what, David, you know, my take on that, too, is because of the way business is, even for the dentist today, they don't really have set hours like they used to. So, like, you know, on one week they might be in there on a Thursday, you know, afternoon, but the next following week they're not even there on Thursday at all.
So the point of Tony saying that he advertises it and he pushes it as a convenience, it kind of is in essence for those offices that may not want to wait around for you to show up.
Right.
Hey, you know, don't worry about waiting for me to come in tomorrow at a certain time or later today. If you've got my mailer, I can fax it to you. You can just shoot it out today. I'll have it tomorrow and get it back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I hear a lot from customers, David, is they can't believe how fast they get their handpieces back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're not used to it, you know.
Right.
I mean, even when you take a customer that was ordering their own turbines from, like, a Henry Schein, they don't get their handpieces fixed as fast as you do it or as I do it.
Right.
Even when they order their own parts,
so they are amazed at that. So
yeah,
if you get them on that mailing system where there is a couple days in between there for shipping purposes, that's no skin off their back. I mean, I know when Steve had us market to our local area here in Dana Point and the surrounding little towns here, we would do repair and we'd get it back to them. Sometimes not the next day, but maybe 2 days later. And I can remember walking into offices and the look of shock on the receptionist's face when I walked back in 2 days later with their handpiece. It just caught me off guard. And I thought, well, they're so not used to this. Even 2 days is like a miracle.
It is.
To them.
Two or three days is still a miracle.
I can remember being behind the ears walking into these offices and just kind of laughing to myself going, hey, these people are totally amazed we got this back in just 2 days. Yeah.
Hey, this is Doug up in Massachusetts.
Yes, yes.
A lot of my clients are they're the same way. They're totally amazed. So now when they call, they'll say, there's no rush. You don't have to get it back to us right away, you know. We
uh-huh.
know how you are. So
right.
they're just used to waiting 5 or 6 weeks to get them back.
Hey, Dave. Dave Reinhardt, just on this point about speed, as I've been introducing the mailers, one of the things I say to customers is these things are actually the fastest way to get hand pieces to me. I may be in another part of my territory on the day you call, and if you put it in the mail, I'll have it the next morning, and that'll be quicker than if I were to get there. So that's been very useful in getting folks to adopt the mailers.
Now, are you like, is your territory like 4 hours from one side to the other?
No.
In the car?
No, it's northern New Jersey, so it's very, you know, it's pretty dense.
Let's talk about that.
You know, but every time I've said that, people say, oh, well, that makes sense. The other thing I've told them is it's a convenient place if they do want to send a couple handpieces to me. It's a convenient place for them to put them when they identify them as being in need of service. Because, as you know, a lot of times, you know, those things will end up back in the rotation, and they'll say, oh, I don't know which one it is. I'll send it to you as soon as I find it again.
Okay, so once again, you're promoting it as a convenience to them and actually something that might speed up the repair process.
Yes, yes.
And
it seems to be well received.
And then so what that's doing for you is freeing up some time for marketing and saving you, depending on what your marketing schedule is like, and not having to run around town from left side to the right side to the north side to the south side, is that you're probably saving money on gas as well.
Yeah.
So it's allowing you more marketing time and probably saving you a little bit of gas money too.
Yes. But and the other thing is a lot of times even if they call in the afternoon and they've already had a mail pickup at their office,
mm-hmm.
you know, the person who calls will say, oh, I'll just swing by the post office and, you know, get it in the post office before 5, and then you'll have it tomorrow. So.
Perfect. And then just have her walk next to the in the office next door and pick up a few ham pieces there.
Yeah.
David?
Yes.
Hi, this is Debbie in Virginia.
Yes, Debbie.
Hey, on another point, if we could, I'm interested in finding out what you guys are doing for general liability insurance. I've gotten a quote anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 a year for insurance for just general liability. Love to hear what you're doing and how you're handling it.
Gary speaking here. I mean, first year I was in business, it cost me $500. The second year I was in business, I didn't even buy it. Right now I still don't have it.
Gary, this is Steve Everhart.
Stupid, I know, Steve.
No, Debbie, it's not. It's actually what I recommend. You cannot get insurance. You guys can't. You can't get insurance for the only real risk in this business, and that is the burr coming off in a mouth in a dental office. You cannot get insurance. Lloyd's of London will write it for about $25,000. But just to have a general policy, and I've talked to several insurance agents about this. I talked to my lawyer about it. It's just not going to cover any incidences where we have that create vulnerability for us. So what you do is you incorporate, and you have a homeowner's policy, and that's about all you can do. It's a total waste of money to buy a general liability insurance policy. That's my opinion. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an insurance executive, but I've talked to a lot of my buddies are, and I've been dealing with this now for 15 years almost. And that's my recommendation: is save your money, but make sure that you're operating with the protection of an S corp or an LLC.
And Steve, this is Tony. This is the way I've been doing it for 12 years. I've not bought insurance day one. I did an S corporation. I was about a year and a half in the business, and I had a dentist. I got a letter from an attorney that a bird flew out of a handpiece, and he was checking in some stuff for his dentist, to find out what was happening. And
yeah.
I got a hold of my attorney, and the thing is, there's a lot of factors. Was it a chuck defect? Was it a bird defect? Was it something the dentist did wrong? There's other factors besides just your repair. And he told me just to have them send me dates of when this took place. Well, luckily, I hadn't done any repairs for this office prior to that date, but he said there's a lot of factors involved. It's not just your repairs. You got other things to take in consideration. Before it would come down to you.
Yeah, this come up twice in all of these years, and maybe one of the two times was your situation, Tony D. But I know a lot of people respectfully disagree with me on this, and over the years they've bought the $400 and $500 variety of insurance, and they feel better about it. They sleep at night. After all, that's why we buy insurance to begin with. So if you feel more comfortable about it, that's fine. But Debbie, $5,000 is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that would
make, I got to add one thing to this.
Sleep paying $5,000. I'd rather be totally uninsured. So that's my take on it, and I just. As business owners, we there's risk in everything that we do, and you try and quantify it. What's the downside in this case here? I just think that you're better off without it.
Steve, can I add one thing to this?
Gary?
Yes.
If in fact you are going to offices and starting to mess with the air compressors and that kind of thing, and say you slip or you get a little bit crazy with a wrench, say you break a water line and you flood that office. If you go in that direction, okay, then it would pay to have at least like this $500 policy. And if you want a name, I can give you a name. But if you're not doing any of that, like to the point that you're actually worried about doing something like that, I wouldn't too worry about it from the conversations that I've had with lawyers, and I got a lot in the family and that kind of thing. I mean, they're going to see that you're a corporation. As soon as they see you're a corporation, they're going to say, well, this corporation doesn't have any money in its account. There's no point in even bothering with this suit. And they're going to go after the manufacturers of this stuff, not you.
Yeah, that's a point well taken. And maybe my opinion is a little jaundiced. Some of my best friends are lawyers, and they remain my best friends. But here's the deal. You're absolutely right. They're always going to look for deep pockets. They're going to look for trails. They're going to look for deep pockets. And they're generally looking for insurance policies.
Yeah, and if you have a big one, you're going to get sued. If you don't have one, they're going to leave you alone.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Now, that may be, we may be dead wrong about that, but that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. And
I agree with it, though.
Yeah, they're looking for policies because they know their settlement value with an insurance policy, and they're looking at a corporation and saying this, you know, this guy's a deadbeat, and they move on.
Right.
Steve, I'd just like to throw in one comment about BMS, and I don't. Everyone has their own interpretation and what they do for, quote, office service calls or service in an office or whatever. But over the course of time, I've had people ask me, well, can't you adjust my delivery system in the operatory? And I've gone back in my mind to a comment you made to me 100 years ago when I first started in the marketing part. You said, Jay, remember, our singular focus is handpiece repair. And I've used that by saying, my focus is handpiece repair. I'm getting out of my realm of expertise regarding your compressors or your delivery system. However, I'm sure you've got people who take care of this for you. I can identify if it's the handpiece the problem or if it's your system. And I just use it as a nice way of saying, I'm not going to put a wrench on your unit because it's out of my realm of expertise. My singular focus is handpiece repair. And I've had many a practice say, you know, I'll get my guy over here. It may be a day or two. What they're hoping is you'll try to fix the problem for him immediately because you're there. And if you feel comfortable, that's great. But I don't know how you go about charging for that if you wanted to. And I do agree with you, Steve, on the S-Corp or the LLC. And then with your personal home insurance, get $1 million policy or whatever it is. It's not that expensive. And you protect yourself to the best ability. And that's just my thoughts on it.
David, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Earlier on, somebody mentioned that they put in a handling charge and it's across the board. They charge it to everybody. How do they calculate that handling charge? Is it a fixed amount or is it depending on how many hand pieces? Or how do they work out the amount that they charge?
Yeah, that was Tony D, and he has a fixed. He used to have a fixed price, whether there was one hand piece that he was returning or 12, and it was $5.95, and he recently bumped that to just a flat handling charge of $6.95.
Yeah, and that's why I label it on the I made it a line item called handling charge, and at the end of my invoice after I do taxes and everything, I put the handling charge down there at the bottom.
Okay, I also noticed that you charge tax on all the parts that you put into that handpiece.
I have two in the state of Indiana. Yes. The state of Indiana requires me to charge taxes on parts. Labor, you can't charge tax on in Indiana, but you can on the parts.
Oh, I see. Okay. Because we don't have that here in California, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. And I know on the handling charge, you know, like Dave said, I might be sending out just a can of lubricant or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's on every invoice, period. And like I said, I've only had one or two people when I first started. I have had nobody else since. And it's just on every invoice, period.
Okay. Thank you so much for your response. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks. And just a quick note to Debbie, who posed the question regarding insurance. And that is, in the 12-plus years I've been with the Dentist Choice, I've never heard of one franchise owner being sued. The only complaints that I've heard about from franchise owners is that the doctor complained, and so the franchise owner, you know, just put a new turbine in for him. And that was the extent of it, the cost of a chuck spindle combo and two bearings just to kind of get past it. And that's the worst case scenario I've heard of in 12 and a half years. So.
And something else too, David.
Yes.
This is not something that's new. This is something that's happened since dentistry's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, birds getting thrown out chucks. It's just part of it. It happens periodically. It's not something that's every day. But, I mean, you could talk to any of your dentists and ask them how many times they've had a burr throw out of a chuck. And I guarantee you, they'll tell you at least a half a dozen times.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Sonny. Every one of my dentists have said that they've had burrs fall out, and it's just they don't make anything out of it. They're, you know, it's no big deal. Well, it's a big deal, but it's something that happens all the time.
You know that if you read the instructions that come with a manual, most of them will tell you to go and check the burr before you even spin the damn thing. Try pulling out and make sure it stays in. And if they do that and it feels loose to them, they use it, they're the ones at fault.
Right. The dentist is the one that's at fault in a customer.
Right.
Worst case
dentist
scenario,
the girl,
customer's going to go after the dentist.
It's not your fault. Yeah, you can't be there to check it, man. They'd never win a suit like that. Never.
And that might be why we've never heard of one, Gary.
Well, that would be, you know, that's how come I stopped paying for the insurance, David. I didn't see the point in it. You know, this is how I handle, like, if I have an issue with, like, a compressor in an office or something, I have a local guy out here that, you know, I'm kind of in bed with. And what I do is I have him go out. He's got his own insurance. I don't need to worry about it. You know, I've yet to see any money from the guy, but, you know, we just started working on this. You know, so if you pass that off, you can still make money on the side from another company that you're sending, but make sure you know who this guy is and what kind of work he does, because you got your name all over that. But, you know, that's the best way, and just don't even deal with it. You know, we keep saying that the handpieces are our singular focus, you know, our only focus, and if you start to stray from that, that becomes untrue, and now your credibility is questionable, if you know where I'm coming from. So sometimes it's better to get somebody that knows more about that stuff than you do, deals with it all the time, and, you know, like I'm working out a deal with this guy in my neighborhood that with anything that comes out of the office that I send him into, I'm going to get a piece of. You know, so, you know, there's a couple in the works right now, but nothing's happened yet, but I think that's the best way to go. Even with, you know, other equipment, this guy will fix the x-ray machines. I mean, you name it. He'll do it all, but you're the guy standing in front, and you don't want to start messing with that if you never mess with that. Because you can get hurt doing that stuff.
Absolutely you can, Gary, and I'll bring a quick case in point to you, and that is we had a newer franchise owner that went into an office that was an existing customer, and they were having a problem with their airline. He, unfortunately, not knowing anything about how they worked, started turning dials and switches and messing with it, ended up shutting the doctor's whole office down. Originally, the problem was with one chair. He ended up shutting the guy's entire office down. The doctor had to call, and, you know, I think it was Patterson that had originally installed those chair units, had to call their service people out there, and he ended up losing the customer. So,
yeah.
I mean, I just feel for the guy terribly, but you got to be careful to really stay within your area of expertise. And if you are going to venture outside of that area, you need to be darn sure you know what you're doing. So be careful there as well. And besides, setting up relationships and building relationships with people that are in the same dental offices that you are, although they're performing a different service function, is brilliant. I mean, everybody should have an air compressor guy or a chair guy in their area that they have a referral relationship with. I believe it was Jay Eubanks, a couple of meetings, actually the first Dentist Choice Connected meeting that we had mentioned the relationships that he's built in his local area with people that are experts in those fields, with the chairs and the air compressors, and they refer business to each other every year, and I think Jay quoted saying he gets 5 or 6 new customers per year because of this referral relationship he has with a chair guy.
Hey, this is Mike.
Yeah.
How do you find those people that you would build those relationships with?
Well, you can usually – well, I'll let Jay speak to that. Jay?
Okay. In my case,
I took my local phone book and looked in the yellow pages, and we have a little area called dental equipment and supplies, and I looked at the numbers and phone numbers, and Shine was in there, and Patterson were in there, and then there's a company out of Denver, and then they, oh my gosh, this is Colorado Springs. So I called them up and said, they really thought I was a doctor. They were all excited. And I said, well, no. I fix hand pieces, but you guys do compressors and things like that. And they said, yeah, we do x-rays. So I said, hey, I'd like to get together and have lunch with you, my treat, and just kind of explain what I do, and then you can explain to me what you do. And that was the beginning of the relationship. And we refer back and forth. And, like, I don't get a piece of their business. If I refer them to Dr. Smith and they fix the compressor, they don't send me a $20 bill for my 0.1% or whatever. We don't do it that way. It's, hey, here's an office that's got a problem, because our mindset is we're here to eliminate problems in the office that are related to the delivery systems or x-rays or handpieces, so the doctor won't be calling Shine or Patterson or Benko or Burkhart, all these guys that have vans running around all the time. You know, so that was our focus, and it's worked out well. As David said, you know, I get 5 or 6 accounts a year for people that I don't get their handpiece business yet, and then I reciprocate because I'm in an office, and I overhear the staff, you know, saying, hey, you know, Patterson's worked on this 9 times, it's not working. And they'll look at you and go, do you know anybody that does this? Boom, then you. Here's a number, here's the guy, call him up. And I do agree with the previous caller, you're putting your name on them, so you have to feel comfortable that they know what they're doing. But it's a relationship that builds over time. But it's been a very good one. It's been a very good one. I do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Gary again. You know, the guy that I happen to use used to be an ex-Patterson employee, and the smaller guys in your areas will usually be from a large company, and that's how they learned what they're doing.
Correct.
So it's you know, it's like he doesn't charge as much as a Shine does or a Patterson, and there's a couple of those kind of guys out in my area. I just happen to pick the closest guy to my house. Because,
sure,
you know, I could run over there in a matter of, you know, I could ride a bicycle there in 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, the reason that I am actually working to get a piece, because he actually does hand pieces himself, but nothing like we do. You know, I only get the hand pieces from him that he don't want to sit there and fix, usually the slow speeds, you know, the shorties and that kind of thing that he ain't real good at. You know, so you just got to really, really pay attention, though, who you're using when you do that, because your name is attached. If this guy messes up, a good chance you're going to lose that business from him.
Sure.
Your hands,
oh, yeah,
business from him. A good chance of it.
This is Dave again. On the point of how to find these guys, I've found 3 of them within the last 6 weeks. And in all cases, I've merely engaged the dentist in conversation when I'm already in the office. I may say, by the way, who do you use for your equipment repair in the office? And, you know, on 3 separate occasions, I got 3 different glowing recommendations from my customers for people who do that. So if you can just sort of naturally weave it into the conversation, you may be surprised at how you can get references.
Yeah, they are usually, well, I mean, back in the day, they used to be in the phone book. Not a lot of people bother spending that kind of money anymore for phone book advertisement, because people tend to go to the Internet more than the phone book today.
That's a good point.
It is.
Well, that's a part of life. I mean, we're not going to get around that. That's just the way the world is going. It's what they call
the
state today.
Sorry, Gary, but what they're doing, and so it is a lot of times a good idea to at least have your business listing, even a one-line listing in the phone book, because all of these phone book companies do also list onto the Internet.
So any and all of the phone book companies that you work with, I'll just name the Yellow Pages as being the most popular, they will list you not only in their phone book but also on the Internet.
Yeah, and a lot of times you could sign on to that stuff and just put your own name in it.
Yep, you can.
But I don't even bother with it because I don't think that that's where your business is coming from. People, well, this is what I see, David. I mean, people are, you know, used to getting their hand pieces fixed by somebody else. When you go in there, they start taking a liking to you, and then they switch. But before you walked in the door, they're not looking to where to go get their hand pieces fixed. They already got somebody. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, other than the new startup offices, which right now you're not going to see a whole lot of.
Well, I won't argue with you, but I'll definitely say it's good to have your number listed.
Depends on the cost.
Well, actually, if you have established the business landline for your lab, you'll get a free one in the Yellow Pages anyway, because that's what they've
just
done for me forever.
Right.
Pardon?
Just with the phone number. When you just get the phone number, you're already in, you know, their listing. So.
Well, I was going to say, in mine, since I have a business landline at the shop, I show up in the Yellow Pages as the Dentist Choice, has my phone number and my address, just like the Shine guy's got his office number and address. But maybe every area could be different. That's true. But, I mean, I don't pay for it, but I'm in the Yellow Pages.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Just by, you know, having a business listing, they list you automatically in that. For sure.
Correct.
And be real careful, Gary. I just want to make one comment to what I heard you say earlier, and that was that your air compressor guy does hand pieces too. That seems a little dangerous. I mean, I would definitely lean towards having an air compressor guy and a chair guy that just concentrated on that and wasn't in the handpiece repair business.
Yes, I agree with you, David, but you got to do what you got to do when you got to do it.
I know, but there's got to be more than that one guy that's 10 minutes away.
No, I know there's another one because I found one the other day. So, you know,
gotcha.
I always think about everything. Trust me. Been
good.
There, done that.
Any other comments or questions for folks in the last couple minutes here?
Hi, Dave. This is Ray Wilson in Maryland.
Yes, Ray.
I'm just I'm basically starting my customer base and so forth. But I found that, you know, when I go into dentist offices, they're always asking me, you know, about dental equipment, and things are basically far out of my reach. And I'm looking to make some contacts with those kind of folks. But I often find that, you know, I'll always ask the person, you know, who do they deal with and so forth. And before I recommend anything, I always go home and check up, because there's a guy around in my area who's DC Dental, and I know they do handpiece repair stuff. And I'm afraid, you know, in terms of contacting those kinds of folks, that I'll be undercutting my own business.
I agree with you 100%. I would not.
But, you know, I also kind of feel like, you know, if I did have a nice contact with those kinds of folks, I mean, even if I'm not getting any money from them, nice reciprocal effect happens where, you know, I get referrals, I can give referrals to him, he can give me some of his, and so forth.
But I don't. Why would he give you referrals if he also does handpiece repair?
No, that's exactly. I just, like, you know, why would I help him out to take my customers away?
Well,
I don't understand that.
So make sure. Probably the best way to do it is what Dave Reinhart mentioned, and that is talk to your current customers. You'll get some real good feedback, and when you get some positive feedback about one guy from a couple, two, three different offices, and he only concentrates on the chairs and the other equipment, that would be a good guy to do what Jay did, take him out to lunch and try and work out a referral relationship with him.
Cool.
Sure.
You just mentioned Dave. Dave, I know you're out there. I want to thank you very much for those pricing things, because you helped me not reinvent my own wheel, and I found that very, very helpful for me to kind of, when I'm with the customers, I can quote them prices almost offline. So I want to thank you very much for that.
That was for Dave Reinhardt. So
that was for Dave Reinhardt.
Yep. So and,
you're welcome.
And thanks again, Dave. I've definitely got a lot of positive feedback from franchise owners on that pricing connected meeting that we had.
Can I ask one more question? I think this is I forget who. I think it was Tony. I got into the meeting a little bit late because I was unfortunately doing some pickups and deliveries. But the problem I'm having is that if I actually, it's not really a problem. You know, if I go 8 miles in any direction of my house, I've got like 800 of my potential customers. So, my marketing thing is that, you know, I'm local. I mean, I'm really local. You just call me up, and I'm right down the street from wherever you happen to be doing your business with. The thing I'm having problems with now is that I'm doing pickups and deliveries, and I'm not marketing my new potential customers. I'm just the thing I want to do now, especially with new customers, is I want to get in their office and show them me and sell them on me and, you know, my service and all that kind of fine thing. But at what point would I, you know, stop making those personal visits and kind of start getting them into, you know, using the mail system and so forth?
That's a great question, and we actually, the first probably half of our discussion today was based on getting customers on mailers like that. So, you know, to not repeat ourselves here, I'll definitely take your call off of this TDC Connected meeting and share all that information
well,
with you.
When we meet in Las Vegas, I mean, you don't have to do that because I know you're busy, but if when we meet in Las Vegas, can we spend some time around that kind of stuff?
You bet, Ray. We'll make a point of that. We're going to have a lot of networking time, a lot of power panels with the champions, and we're going to be hitting just tons of areas. So make a note, Ray, and bring that one up, because when you wean people off of the pickup and delivery is an important thing. So we'll make sure that we focus on that in Vegas.
Well, currently I'm employing slave labor. I call him my son when I can try to do that. But, you know, regardless, I want to figure out a way to have this not cost me money and not cost me customers. So,
yeah,
thank you.
So you know, the Tony D model is what works.
Cool.
And the JU Banks model of, you know, getting a lot of people to mail them in. That's how you make your money. That's the most economical way. But there's a very delicate line that you have to not cross. And
right.
You got to make sure
right.
that you're meeting the expectations of your customers, and they understand that, you know, that perhaps using the mailer is the most convenient thing for them. So we'll talk a lot more about that, buddy.
All right, thank you.
All right, guys. Well, it was a great meeting. I think we learned a lot, and I want to just thank everybody who contributed and those of you who may not have contributed or had time to but joined the call. Once again, this meeting is also being recorded and will be available with all of the others on April 16th for all of you guys to download off of a site that we're creating for that. So have a great day, guys, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.